My name is Ben. I'm the lead pastor here at CORE. And let me just say this to begin. I know the mornings are going to be good when I can start by saying, y'all sound good this morning. And my hope is, even if you're watching online from the confines of your own recliner or in your car, hopefully you sound good as well and nobody around you is listening. You can engage in that. Whether you're here in person checking us out online, we could not be more excited that you are here with us as we cruise into part four of this five-part series we have been calling Faithful. And whether you've been here or not throughout the first 3 weeks of this series, the entire series revolves around this tension that we all see as we look into our world and, frankly, as we get honest enough to look into our own lives and the pattern in which our own lives and our own direction takes us. You see, it's no secret for us to look around and to even look into our own lives and to recognize that it is a world running on empty. That our lives oftentimes can feel as if we are worn out and looking for some sense of relief. And yet the reality is we've tried what the world has offered us. You see, we aren't worn out looking for relief because of a lack of trying. We've tried all the solutions that the world has provided. And yet, time and time again, we find ourselves back at a place in which our tank has been drained. We've tried the new job. We've tried the traveling sports, the new home, the new car, and none of it seemed to work. And we continue to ask the question, what does it look like and what does it take for me to begin to live a life and have a future that isn't defined by running on empty? And you see, that's what this series is all about. It's about a belief that in every single one of our lives and in every single one of our futures that something better is possible. That we are capable of being people who refill our tanks and take that refilled tank out into a world that desperately needs it because they're running on empty as well. And yet doing so in every single one of our lives, this is what we've highlighted throughout the first 3 weeks of this series, requires us to enact some things, to live out some things in our lives. And the reality is it requires that of us because of what we were invited to almost 2,000 years ago. You see, within our very title, if you walked into this room and you consider yourself a Christ follower, there is something within that that calls us to more. And let me just say this. If you walked into this room and you're still skeptical about this whole faith thing and you don't consider yourself to be a Christ follower, you are here during the perfect series. And this is why. Because this is a series where you get to simply sit back and relax. A series where you get an inside look into what we as Christ followers are called to, into what we have failed at time and time again, and yet what we are attempting to get better at for the sake of the world around us. And if you are not a Christ follower, during this series, you can simply lean in under the comfort of you get a pass during this series. But for those of us who are Christ followers, we are being called to more because 2,000 years ago, when Jesus stepped onto the pages of history, he extended an invitation that had the potential to change our lives in maybe the most unorthodox way. You see, when Jesus stepped onto the pages of history, he invited you and I to follow him. Never once in his invitation was it for you and I to simply believe in him, because that would be easy. We can believe in things and never have to change anything about our lives and our futures, but following actually requires action. Following requires the action of taking steps right behind the person who's leading the way. You see, for those of us who are Christ followers, we have been called to put our faith into action, because when we fail to put our faith into action, what ultimately happens like a muscle is this, is that our faith stops growing. That when we stop working it out, it becomes frail and brittle and breakable. And none of us as Christ followers set out on this journey and said yes to God under the premise that someday we hope that our faith can become breakable and fall out beneath us. You see, all of us want a strong and thriving faith. And yet throughout this series, we've been tackling this question. So if we've been called to put our faith into action, what is it that fuels an active and growing faith? What does it take for us to have a strong and thriving faith that grows day after day in our lives and into our future? And over the last 3 weeks, we've been tackling that question head on. A couple weeks ago, Josh kicked off our series and really set the premise around this. then in order for us to be courageous enough to take steps forward, we have to first believe that the God of the universe is in our corner and calling us to do something. And what would we do if we believed with all of our hearts that the God of the universe was with us and behind us and for us in our lives? What would it call us to in our world? And then 2 weeks ago, Des continued on in an incredible way by challenging us to this, that in our lives, it requires more than just knowing, because knowing makes us haughty. Knowing makes us prideful. Knowing makes us know-it-all in a world, come on, y'all, that already has enough of those. But doing, application, that's what makes us holy. Application is what makes us world changers. And in order for us to move from knowers to doers, we have to engage consistently in practical teaching. Someone who is capable of making the word real and relevant in our lives and then challenging and inspiring us to step out and to put it into action. And then last week, we continued forward with maybe the hardest one of all to date. And it talked about this nudge that every single one of us have, as Christ followers have felt in our lives and in our journeys of our faith. And yet oftentimes this nudge that many of us have resisted along the way. A nudge that's calling us to push through our inadequacies, to say yes to God, to step outside of our comfort zone, and to serve other people. And in knowing that God calls us and nudges us towards serving others, not because he needs or wants something from us, but because he loves us enough and wants something for us. And it's an invitation that's extended to you and I under this premise, that when we step out of our comfort zone into personal ministry, into rocking a baby, into clicking a button on a computer, into handing out a weekly, into cleaning a toilet, whatever it looks like in serving other people, we put ourselves in a position to experience God in a way that somebody else will do it, will never allow us to experience him. That somebody else will fill out the cards. Somebody else will rock the baby. Somebody else will be a middle school girl, a small group leader. I don't have to fill out the black card because somebody else will do it. You may be right. You're probably going to be wrong. You may be right, but the reality is it isn't about who fills the position. It's about an opportunity that you aren't seizing, that God has given you to experience him by saying yes and pushing through your inadequacies and what we showed last week by bringing your lunchbox with whatever it has in it, whatever you have every single day to the table and saying, man, all I've got is crumbs, God, but I'm going to do what I can do and trust that you'll do what only you can do. And if you're sitting there or you're watching at home this week and you're still hanging on to that black card, it's sitting on your kitchen table or you threw it away as soon as you got it hard so that you wouldn't have to be convicted by it anymore, maybe this is the last push you need. Stop praying about it and fill it out. Hello. Stop using the crutch of I'm praying about it and just fill it out. Because I believe with all of my heart, it's God's will for you to jump in with both feet and to experience something in your future that is far better than what you're experiencing now in the unorthodox way of pouring yourself out into other people and recognizing that somehow that fills me back up. That was the unorthodox invitation that Jesus gave us, that if we were willing to pour ourselves out into what he was inviting us into, we wouldn't become drained. We would actually become full in that process. And throughout every single week of this series, we stepped into something more that Christ is calling us to do with our faith for the sake of the world around us, but in order also for our own faith to take a giant leap forward. And today, we continue forward with maybe the most difficult part of our faith journey. It's something that every single one of us don't necessarily struggle with externally, but something in our faith journey that many, if not all of us, struggle with internally. It's this dilemma that we have between the highs and the lows of life as it relates to our relationship with God or our relationship with Jesus. That how do we cope with the highest highs of life and the lowest lows of life in relationship to Jesus and how much he loves us and him wanting the best for us? Because every single one of us in this room walk through moments of our life that can best be defined as pivotal circumstances. And around here, we believe with all of our hearts that pivotal circumstances have the ability to grow our faith, even if those pivotal circumstances are negative ones. You see, every single one of us within our lifetime and our time here on earth know that as we spend time on this earth, we will experience the highest of highs, and we will also experience the lowest of lows. And beyond explanation, sometimes it can turn from one to the other on a dime. Am I right? And as we experience that turn on a dime and we go through the valley moments of life, we begin to question who God is and how he could possibly love me. You see, it's easy oftentimes in the highest of highs that as we experience the pivotal circumstances of our lives that are all well and all good, things like getting married or having our first child, that our questions and our doubts about God oftentimes fade into the periphery. But sometimes as we experience the many negative events of our lives, y'all know what I'm talking about. The diagnosis, the death of a loved one far too soon, the financial misstep that put us in a hole that we don't know how to get out of, the infertility or the miscarriage or the loss of a child. As we go through those difficult seasons of our lives, we begin to ask questions like, where is God in all of this? And how can we possibly justify a good God who loves me in light of present circumstances of the pain and the suffering of the world around me? And you see, this morning, our hope is that as we journey into this fourth part of the series, that we begin to understand and see from a different perspective that even the negative events of our life have a way of propelling our faith forward, have a way of growing our faith into something better than what it presently is because we were able to persevere and push through the difficult circumstances and the negative events of our lives and undoubtedly the negative events of our future. But before we dive in wholeheartedly to that and address that tension within us, I think it's first appropriate and necessary for us to address the two major hangups, at least in my mind, I'm sure there's more than that, the two major hangups that many of us encounter as we begin to see negative events and circumstances of our life and the world around us. You see, oftentimes, tension number one that we are forced to deal with and overcome if we're going to be able to get to a point in which the questions and the doubts and the negative events of our lives and the world around us actually propel our faith forward and grow our faith is to acknowledge this tendency of us as humanity. That oftentimes the most significant place where our doubts and questions about the existence of God or the goodness of God rise to an undeniable level is when not we look at our own circumstances, hang on y'all, but when we look out into the world and see the brokenness and the mess of the world around us. That oftentimes we grapple with those questions of how can there possibly be a good God who would allow this suffering and pain to happen in the world? Or how can there be a God who loves the world and yet allows these things to happen in the world? It's the moment in which we look out and we see racism running rampant or injustices in our world. It's the moments we see mass shootings or murder. It's the moments where we see government decisions that we feel like make unnecessary burdens on people's lives. Or we look out and we see childhood cancer or people diagnosed with illnesses far sooner than what we should have lost them on this earth. And many times the hurdle that we must get over first is this. And maybe you've noticed this about yourself or you've noticed this about other people who have had questions and doubts about their faith and begun to drift or even just straight up walked away from their faith. And it's this. It's that those who leverage injustice and suffering as an argument against the existence of God usually leverage the experience of others and not their own. You see, we begin to ask those questions. If God is good, why is there so much pain and suffering in the world? But when we simply use the pain and suffering, the general pain and suffering of the world around us to sway our position on God, what we miss is this. And come on, y'all, we've all seen this, we've all experienced this. That there are tons of people in our world who have had this uncanny ability to walk through pain and suffering, and yet they don't lose their faith in God. They walk through their own difficult moments, and somehow, some way, their faith actually grows in the midst of their pain. Their faith remains intact in the midst of their unfair circumstances. And I think what we have to come to recognize is this. Is that if we would simply hear those people's stories, then we begin to hear a different side of the coin. You see, at least to me, it seems unfair to leverage the suffering of people who believe in God as evidence that there is no God. Am I right? That it seems, may I use the word, somewhat disingenuous for us to use the pain and suffering of people who actually believe in God as proof that there is no God. If we want to use our own, I get that. And we'll talk about that, but I figured it would be healthy for us to start with an acknowledgement that it isn't fair to borrow other people's plights to draw our own conclusion from the outside. You see, the other tension is this. Is that oftentimes there's this argument against the existence of God based solely on the existence of pain and suffering in the world. That because there's pain and suffering in the world, I don't know that I can believe that there is actually a God. And let me just say this. Suffering in no way proves the lack of existence of a God. Because truthfully, come on, y'all. There is absolutely zero correlation between pain and suffering and the existence of God. All suffering proves is that there is not a God who does not allow pain and suffering. And if you're sitting there and you're like, man, I don't believe in that God because there is pain and suffering, all of us in the room who are Christ followers would say, we agree with you because we don't believe in that God either. In fact, the God that we believe in operated on this premise. Christians believe in a God who allowed the worst possible thing to happen to the best possible person. And some of y'all are sitting there and you're like, Ben, that's worse. But let me explain to you why it isn't. You see, as we journey through our own stories of pain and suffering and the negative events of our lives, and we grapple with that question, some of us walked into this room in that very place, that we find ourselves right smack dab in the middle of pain and suffering and hurt that feels unbearable in the moment, and we don't know how to keep going. We don't know how to press forward. We don't know how to lean into God in these moments when things seem so unfair. And we walked into this room desiring some sort of answers, something more. Something that would be a solution to the tension and the questions and the doubts that we're feeling. And you see, this morning, what I want to address first and foremost is this, is that if you walked in here with those hurts and those pains and those negative events and unfair circumstances of your life, what I want you to hear from me more than anything this morning is this. And I am so sorry that you're walking through that. And what we're talking about today is in no way a diminishment of the pain and the suffering and the hurt that you're presently walking through, that you're presently feeling. But what today is this, is it's an opportunity for you and I to begin to ask the right questions, to face the right tensions head on in our lives and in our faith journeys so that we can make the most informed decision possible on how we move forward and ultimately what I believe with all of my heart, what positions us to grow our faith in what seems like the most illogical way on the back end in the aftermath of the negative events of our lives. And you see, maybe the starting place for many of us is the exact same starting place that a guy by the name of C.S. Lewis found himself. You see, decades ago, a guy by the name of C.S. Lewis, as he was trying to figure out his own faith journey and trying to figure out how to reconcile a good God with the pain and the hurt of the world and the pain and hurt of his life, put pen to paper and penned this. He wrote, God whispers to us in our pleasures, speaks in our consciences, but shouts in our pains. It is his megaphone to rouse a deaf world. See, oftentimes the biggest wrestling point in our faith as we walk through our own negative circumstances, our own pain, and our own hurt is this thought, that we're journeying through this on our own. that we're walking through this because somehow God has abandoned us. He's left us hang out to dry, just fluttering in the wind to figure it out on our own. And what C.S. Lewis began to grasp was this reality, that in the midst of our pain in our lives is the very moment where God shouts back to us, reminding us that he's still there, that he's been there, reminding us that he's not a God who's caused it, but he's a God who's working in it, reminding us that even if the pain and the circumstances of our lives were by our own choice, that he's a God who's going to work to fix it and walk with us through our messes and attempt to turn us in the right direction for the sake of our futures, for the sake of our marriages moving forward, our parenting moving forward, our finances moving forward, for the sake of our testimony for the world around us moving forward. You see, we haven't been left to flutter in the wind. We have a God who shouts to us in the midst of our pain, wanting to remind us of his voice, wanting to remind us that he's still there. But furthermore, what we also must grasp is this, is not only do we have a God who hasn't left us to flutter in the wind in the midst of our pain, oftentimes the one thing that the enemy wants to convince you of more than anything else in the midst of your pain and your suffering is this: nobody else understands what you're going through. There ain't nobody around you who can sympathize, empathize, understand what you're walking through right now. You are in this on your own. And could y'all just humor me for a second? Look to your left and to your right. The two people that you just looked at on either side of you are walking through, have walked through, are about to walk through hurt and pain and suffering in their lives too. You are not alone in this, and you are not the only one grappling with questions and doubts and uncertainty about who God is and how much he loves you and how all of this correlates between how do I have a relationship with the God of the universe and still I'm insured that my life won't be perfect. And you see, it isn't just us sitting here in 2022. You go back 2,000 years ago, and you engage in the lives of the first dudes who followed this guy named Jesus, and what you quickly find out is this, is that they were no stranger to this wrestling match as well. Is that here they were, the first guys to follow the Son of God who put on flesh and blood, and yet in following him, their lives weren't all rainbows and butterflies either. That they experienced heartache and hardship every step of the way. Look at the life of Matthew. Look at the life of Mark. Look at the life of Luke. Look at the life of John. Look at the life of Paul. Look at the life of Peter. Look at Jesus' own brother, for heaven's sake. James experienced this to a T in his life. And I love talking about James because James is like the absolute ultimate reconcile story. You guys have heard me, if you've been around here, talk about this maybe about a dozen times. But I love this. James was the brother that personifies to a T what your siblings would have thought, my siblings would have thought, if we'd have come to them and told them we were the Son of God, right? James spent a majority of his life firmly believing that his brother was just flat out off his rocker. Like, this dude is crazy. He wet the bed when he was a kid too. I know that dude ain't the Son of God. There ain't no way. Until Jesus went off and did what he said he was going to do. You know that thing, right? Where Jesus said he was going to go to the cross and die and then rise again, and then he went off and actually did it, and then everything changed for this guy named James. And James, the brother of Jesus, who had doubted his entire life, who had thought Jesus was absolutely off his rocker and then changed in an instant, was handed this incredible responsibility as Jesus departed the earth. You know what responsibility James was given? James was given the responsibility to become the leader of the local church right smack dab in the middle of the city of Jerusalem. Like, hey, James, here's your parting gift, brother. Thanks for turning around your life and believing in me. Right smack dab in the middle of a city whose faith absolutely hates ours, I want you to go ahead and launch and build my church right there. And James was probably thinking what many of you think, well, God gave me the assignment, so it's going to be easy. There's going to be no problems. I'm not going to experience pain and suffering along the way. The Son of God was my brother, and he let me do this. Things are going to be easy, right? And you know what ultimately James got? James got arrested by the religious leaders, dragged out to the edge of the city, and stoned. You don't think he wrestled with the exact same questions and tensions that you and I wrestled with? And yet here is this incredible reality, this incredible truth that James, this guy, who that's what he got, that was the reward that he got on this earth at the end for turning his life around and following Jesus. This is what James had to say in the very first chapter of the letter that he wrote. Check this out. Starting in verse 2, James says this: "Dear brothers and sisters, when troubles of any kind come your way, consider it an opportunity for great joy." And now James is officially off his rocker too. Am I right? Like, what in the world is this guy talking about? When we experience pain and hardship and heartache and persecution in our lives, we should consider it great joy? He has no idea what he's talking about. And yet what James saw in the moment was not the pain and the suffering and the hurt it causes in the moment. What James saw was what happens in the aftermath of it. You see, he addresses the questions that came to my mind as soon as I thought James was off his rocker. He says this: "For you know that when your faith is tested, your endurance has a chance to grow." And here we have to do some word assimilation from part one of the sentence to part two of the sentence. You see, James isn't talking about physical endurance. Like, when you're tested, somehow you'll be able to run a mile now. No, James is talking about when your faith is tested, your faith endurance has a chance to grow. That when you become people who are able to persevere and push through the difficult moments of your life and maintain your faith, here is what happens. On the other side, your faith always grows. It's like what Dez said a couple of weeks ago. Your faith in the aftermath actually becomes stronger, even though it was being beat up in the moment. That it was that muscle that was being worked that is now growing. And it's like James was setting the table for this reality that every single one of us as Christ followers would have to come to grips with. Wrinkle-free days don't create great faith. Hello. Did I tell you this morning was going to be easy? I hope not. Wrinkle-free days do not create great faith. They do not grow our faith into a faith that can be replicated in our world, that can become a world-changing kind of faith, that can be a in spite of our circumstances kind of faith that the rest of the world looks on and says, "I want me some of that." We only get that when the things we think we actually believe are tested. You see, we don't know what we actually believe until what we claim to believe has been tested. And a faith that can't be tested, hang on, y'all, can't be trusted. A faith that can't be tested and put through the ringer can't be trusted. You see, our faith, our lives, our relationship with Jesus has to be put through the ringer so that we can come out the other side equipped and strengthened to push forward no matter what this world, no matter what the enemy may throw at us, no matter how many times, and this is going to make sense in just a couple of minutes, no matter how many times the enemy wants to sift us like wheat through the circumstances of this world. That when we are capable of going through the sifting process and coming out the other side, clinging to our faith, we now become people who are capable of changing the world around us in tangible ways. Don't believe me? 2,000 years ago, this very thing happened to a T. A guy by the name of Peter, I referenced him just a couple minutes ago, one of the very first guys that was called to follow Jesus. Don't believe in me, follow me, and I'll show you how to fish for people. I'll show you how to change hearts. I'll show you how to change eternities. I'll give you a purpose and a fulfillment that this world could never give. That guy, you know what he was best known for? Peter was best known for sticking his foot in his mouth. Because Peter made a whole lot of bold claims and then he wasn't able to follow through on them. So much so that when we get to the end of his journey with Jesus, they're sitting in the upper room and they're sharing what we now know as their Last Supper together. And it's like, Peter, he's been asked to walk on water, test, F. Peter's been asked to heal, test, F. And we get to this point in time, and Peter still has this exuberance, this confidence inside of him, like, Jesus, I'm all in for you. Nothing's going to ever make me turn back. And as they're sitting there around the table, Jesus has this private conversation with Peter, and he begins to address this with Peter. Peter, I know you don't understand this yet, but your faith is about to be put through the ringer one more time. To ultimately what Jesus knew prepare him for the task, for the responsibility that was going to be handed down after Jesus left this earth. And as they're sitting around the table in Luke chapter 22, he says this, Simon, Simon, this is Peter, Satan has asked to sift each of you like wheat. But I have pleaded in prayer for you, Simon, that your faith should not fail. Whoa, 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 Jesus, you don't get it. My faith has been put through the ringer before. I've got no questions. I've got no doubts. I'm going to make it through this. It's going to be absolutely no problem. Peter is so confident in the moment that this is the statement he makes. Lord, I'm ready to go to prison with you and even to die with you. And Jesus looks back at him and he's like, Peter, you know all it's going to take to test your faith? 13-year-old girl. Scary in their own right, I know. But all it took that night was a 13-year-old girl saying, I think I've seen you before. I think I've seen you with Jesus. You don't know what you're talking about. I don't know him. I've never been around him. You've got the wrong guy. And before the rooster crowed, Peter's faith has been put through the ringer three more times in denying that he even knew who Jesus was. But in spite of that, as all the disciples fled and they had these questions and doubts about their faith, as Jesus re-encounters them, he does something absolutely incredible. We fast forward to after Jesus' resurrection, and he's sitting around on the beach, having breakfast with his disciples, cooking up some fish, and he sits down and he has one more private conversation with Peter. And he says to Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? Yes, Lord, Peter replied, you know I love you. Then feed my sheep. And I gave you number one of three. Jesus repeats himself three times, and it's like this perfect correlation. Peter had walked back his faith three times, and Jesus restores him three individual times. Like, I know you failed the test. Here's my restoration walking beside you on the first failure. I know you failed the test and you had questions and doubt. Here's my restoration. I know you failed the test. Here's my restoration. Do you love me? You know I love you. And then Jesus gives him his assignment. Test F, test F, test F. On this rock I will build my church. What? God, that doesn't make any sense. And God's like, no, 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 no. You had to go through the refining process. Sometimes you even walk through the failures, but I've been here the entire time extending a hand, wanting to lift you back up and wanting to give you an assignment for purpose, wanting to give you an assignment for fulfillment, wanting to give you an assignment to change the world. And then Jesus finishes this dialogue with what he started the dialogue at the very beginning with Peter. He finishes it with this invitation. Now follow me. Every day from here on out, put that faith that has been put through the ringer, those pains, those sufferings, those hurts, those questions, those doubts, put it into action and go change the world from here on out. And this is what's so cool, that in the aftermath of the pain and the suffering and the hurt, and sometimes the questions and the walking away and the drifting that Peter went through, when he was handed this assignment, here's what happened. Jesus went to be with his heavenly Father. And him and the disciples, we get Peter and John in this particular account that Luke writes about. They go back to the temple. And I'm like, guys, why do you keep going to the temple? Every time you go there, you get in trouble. Don't you know better? But they go back to the temple one more time. And what do they find there? They find this crippled dude who the text tells us he's been there, he's been carried there since birth. Like it literally says, every day since birth, this guy has been carried to the steps of the temple. And everybody in the city of Jerusalem knew who this guy was because every day he was in the exact same place, begging, sitting there all day in the baking sun of the Middle East. And John and Peter, they come across this guy and they begin to ask him, like, what do you want? What do you want from us? You know we can't give you money, like we're dead poor. We were fishermen, then Jesus called us like fish for people, and now we make absolutely nothing. So you can't want money because you know we can't give you that. And they make this roundabout journey to what we can give you is the power of Jesus Christ in healing you. And they bring about this healing into this guy's life. And he stands up right there in front of everybody in the middle of Jerusalem, all of these people of Jewish faith who absolutely hate Jesus Christ. And he stands up and he walks away. And do you know what's behind door number 3 for Peter and John? Arrest. The same high council, the same religious leaders that arrested Jesus, had him thrown in jail, whipped, beaten, brought to Pilate, and crucified on a cross, said, "Go get those dudes. I thought we stomped this out. I thought we got rid of this." And now we're getting stories of these guys rising back up and healing people in front of everybody in the name of Jesus. And they bring Peter and John back into court before Annas and Caiaphas and all the high council, exact same dudes that they brought Jesus in before, and they sent him off to Pilate to be killed. And so here stand Peter and John knowing, all right, we know what's likely to happen. How we answer their questions is going to determine the fate of our futures. And they stand there in court, and in Acts 4, verse 7, we see this. They brought in the two disciples, and they demanded, "By what power or in whose name have you done this?" And in this moment, I can just imagine Peter looking back on all the moments that his faith had been put through the ringer. He had gone through pain and suffering and hurt to this moment where his faith had been strengthened, where the muscle had grown, and this is the response that Peter gave. "Let me clearly state to all of you and to all people of Israel that he was healed by the powerful name of Jesus Christ, the Nazarene, the man you crucified, but whom God raised from the dead." Right? Sorry, drop the mic for all of you guys who don't know what that, sorry. You want to hear our answer? It was like, you've got a chance to get out of trouble. You've got an opportunity to live pain-free days from here on out. All you got to do is recant. All you got to say is, no, you were mistaken. You didn't hear what we actually said. It was something totally different. Like, these guys probably could have said it was witchcraft, and they would have gotten a whole lot less trouble in front of the Jewish council than say, "No, we healed in the name of Jesus Christ, the man you crucified, but God raised him from the dead." And here they stand and they give this answer, and this is the response they get back from these guys who just a few months before that had sent Jesus to his death. "The members of the council were amazed when they saw the boldness of Peter and John, for they could see that they were ordinary men with no special training in the scriptures. And they also recognized them as men who had been with Jesus." Tested faith is how you discover whether or not you have real faith. You want to look to an example of how God can use tested faith in the lives of ordinary people like you and me? The high council made it clear. These dudes weren't that smart. They had no training. They were just ordinary guys. And yet they were changing the world one life, one testimony, one piece of bold communication at a time. You want to know how the story ends? The high council decides, like, they did it in front of everybody. They backed us into a corner. We can't really punish these guys, and so why don't we just leave them with a threat for next time? And so they say, "Hey, guys, if you do this ever again, remember what happened to Jesus? That's what you're signing up for. Leave here and don't ever talk about this guy named Jesus again, or you know what's happening." And they're like, "Eh. You do you, boo. We'll do us. Like, we're good." And you know what they do? They release them, and they immediately go into the city of Jerusalem, into the outskirts of town, and what do? They have a prayer meeting. And what do they do in this prayer meeting? They immediately pray for one thing and one thing only. Boldness. Like, come on, guys, pray like an American. Keep us safe. Help us to find our car keys. But they go out and they pray, "Put us through the ringer some more. Let us say more bold things about you so that our faith can be tested day after day after day by what we're willing to stand on and stand for in the middle of a messy and broken world. And you see, what I believe with all of my heart, y'all, is that's what you and I are being called to. That's the opportunity that we have before us. But in order for us to be strengthened, we have to stop looking at the pain and suffering we go through on this earth as a negative and start recognizing that those things are things God wants to use to produce in us and through us something better. But we finish back at the original question. But Ben, tell me what makes the difference. What do I need to do differently? What makes the difference between the person who's capable of going through pain and suffering and comes out the other side stronger and the people who go through pain and suffering and come out the other side weaker and broken in their faith? Well, it really boils down to three simple things. The first is this. The first is what you believe. You see, what I believe with all of my heart is that if we don't have a Jesus-centered, gospel-centered faith, then we will begin to do two things with our faith. Number one, we will begin to assume what isn't true. We will continue to walk through the painful moments of our life believing that there is a battle that must be justified between a good God and bad things. That it has to be one or the other. But when we have a Jesus-centered, gospel-centered faith, what we realize is this: there couldn't be anything more wrong than that. Read the New Testament. There is no battle that must be won between a good God and bad things. Both can, will, and do coexist in all lives and in this world. Secondly, we will claim what isn't promised. We will go back to the Old Testament and claim promises that were made to people under an old covenant. Don't believe me? Go back and look at the Old Testament and all the people that God loved and God blessed. Do you know what their parting gift was? A long life. Go to the New Testament, not so much. Same God, different covenant. Same God, new plan. Same God, different opportunities to change a hurting and broken world through my hurts and my brokenness. Hello. A God who wanted to change this world and use me to change it by the way in which I came through and came out of my pain, my suffering, and my unfair circumstances of my life. It starts with what we believe, and then secondly, who we listen to. You see, we're presented with a choice every single day of who we listen to in the midst of our pain and suffering. Do we continue to listen to a world who the answer is to constantly have someone to blame? And let me just tell you, the person to blame ain't me. It's never my fault. But we got to have somebody to blame, and so the somebody to blame must be God. Do we continue to listen to a world that always needs to have an explanation that's comprehensible by humanity? Sometimes it's not necessary. That's why it's called faith. That's why it's called trust. That's why I ain't the God of the universe. Because I can't comprehend everything, and that is okay. Because nor do I want to. It's the very same thing the disciples grappled with. That we find in John 9, one day they were walking along the street with Jesus, and they came across the blind man. And you know what their question was from listening to the world? Is this man blind because of his own sins or because of the sins of his parents? Who's to blame? What's the explanation for the hurt and the pain in our world? And Jesus is like, guys, you're not going to understand the explanation I'm going to give you. Like, you can't possibly comprehend the whole dynamic of we live in a broken and dark world, and because I gave you free will and your free will made your own decisions, now there's brokenness and pain and hurt in the world. Guys, let's just simplify this. All you need to understand is this: that the hurt and the pain and the brokenness of this world can be used to glorify my kingdom, can be used to shine a light back on me and the ways in which I love humanity in the midst of their brokenness and the ways in which I'm working in the midst of the brokenness. You see, we have a choice in the midst of our pain and our suffering that determines where our pivotal circumstances pivot us to. Are we listening to the world? Or are we listening to the one who holds the world in his hands? And then lastly, how we frame it. How we frame it. You see, we have a choice every single day to see our pain and our suffering through a temporary mindset, under the premise that what happens to me on this earth is the most important thing. Or for us to be able to grasp the fact that what happens on this earth is but a blip on the radar for something far better, far greater that is coming. And maybe if I walk through just a little bit of pain and suffering right now, it can help me point people to what's better coming after life on this earth. That my pain and my suffering on this earth, if I'm willing to push through it and have a no matter my circumstances kind of faith and set an example for what it looks like to push through those difficult moments, that it could actually change hearts and change lives. And as we stand in a city with 7,500 people whose eternities would be tipped in the wrong way, that if I have to go through a little pain and suffering for it to be tipped in the right way, bring it on. What would change if we had an eternal perspective like that and we reframed our hurt and our pain in looking at it as an opportunity for kingdom impact? You see, that's the reason why every day the prayer of my heart is that my heart would be softened. God, help me to see it as you see it. And God, more than anything, help me to see you in it. I know you're there. I know you're working. Help me to keep my eyes on that. Because here's what I believe. I believe that if we can spot God in it, we can always maintain our faith through it. See, our faith was always meant to be tested. On this earth, we will go through trials and sorrows that has been guaranteed. But Jesus said, I've told you this so that you can have peace in me, a peace that this world can't give, a peace that any solution they feed you will not cure. You will have trials and sorrows. Then he finishes in this way. Take heart, for I have overcome the world. I am bigger than that. I'm greater than that. I'm capable of using all of that junk and bringing about something better for you on the other side, growing your faith, strengthening your faith. But on top of that, I am a God who is also capable of using all of that in the exact same way that I used my son to be a part of the healing and the mending and the fixing and the hopeful process for the sake of the world around you. That I've invited you in your own pain and suffering to be a part of that plan with me. And take heart, for I have overcome the world. At the end of all of this, sometimes it may not feel it in the moment, but you will experience a reward that is greater than you can even comprehend. That is the hope we cling to. Not hope in no pain, hope in a God that is bigger than all of it. Would you pray with me? Father, this morning, God, more than anything, we start here. We thank you for the pain and suffering that your son endured on my behalf. The example he set, the eternal mindset that he started. God, this morning, man, I pray for myself as a Christ follower. I pray for us collectively as Christ followers in this room, at this church, across this city, across this world. That God, we can begin to see our own plights, our own hurts as opportunities to grow our faith, to test our faith, to strengthen our faith so that we can become greater world changers on the other side. Not plights that call into question your existence. Plights that remind us you're a God who walks with us through it. You didn't cause us, but you're working in it. God, that we ultimately, in our hurt, and the way we respond to it, have an opportunity to model a faith that to the rest of the world looks like a faith where they can only say, I don't know what it is, but I want some of that. God, may my life, may my actions, may my faith exemplify that. It's in your name that I pray. Amen.